Okay. Erev Tov, Parshas Vayera. We'll start with something from the fourth Aliyah. Pasuk says, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yates, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Emor El Aaron Kach Matcho Netei Otcha Al Mimei Mitzrayim Al Nerotam Al Yoram Al Agmam. Right, b'chulei. So we know that the mashmalos of the pasuk and the background, just a little background, just to get us into Vayera, is that primarily the main thing that occurs in this week's parsha is the makos. We know there's 10 makos, 7 out of the 10 take place here, and we all know the first 3 makos were performed by Aaron HaKohen as opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu. The first makos was Dam, in which Aaron. Took the staff and hit the Yaor, as he did for Tzvardeya, and Kinim he hit the ground, and we know that Chazal explained that there's a specific reason why that this happened. Moshe didn't perform these makos because he felt bad. He didn't want to personally offend the ground, and he didn't want to hurt the feelings of the Nile River. Why? Because he felt connected to it. He felt that he owed those the sand of the ground in Egypt, and also the Nile River. He felt that he owed them hakaras hatov. Why? Because Chazal explained that they saved him. How do we know this? The Yaor saved Moshe when Yocheved and Miriam ended up putting him in the Teva and leaving and having him flow in the Nile River, and he was in the Teva and through the water, Baruch Hashem, he was able to be saved. And we also know through, this is the harder one that people don't know as much. How did the ground save them? Ah, exactly. Because we all know that when Moshe, that it was a day in which Moshe saw one day a Mitzri that was just mamish beating another yid, and Moshe just he couldn't watch anymore. So it's brought down that he ended up yelling out Hashem's name. One of the Shemos Hashem, which we'll actually maybe speak about later, and the Mitzri died on the spot, and through the ground there was quicksand, or he ended up just burying him. The ground ended up just swallowing him up. Either way, so no one would catch Moshe, killing the Mitzri. But still, the question that obviously needs to be asked here is that so Moshe had a certain sense of gratitude, or he felt bad. Like, this is not, like, we're talking about real life here. This is not some type of imagination or cartoon or like painting, like, or some type of like French poetry. Like, these things, inanimate objects, don't have feelings. So what does that mean? He was afraid that the water was going to be personally offended, or the sand was going to feel bad. What in the world does that mean? I understand, there's something called Bein Adam L'Makom. We don't want to offend HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's its own mila. But on a posh level, obviously there's an aspect of Bein Adam L'Chavero. We understand that our fellow Yidin have feelings. So, you know, sometimes we spoke about a lot over the course of this year about sensitivity. And, you know, it's important not to offend anyone. It's important not to hurt anyone's feelings. But when it comes to the ground, what does it mean about personally offending the ground? You walk every day over the stairs. What's a person supposed to say? I disregard the stairs. I hate the stairs. So I'm just going to walk over them every day. You sound stupid. I'm not hurting the stairs' feelings. You're not doing anything, because it's just it's an inanimate object has a purpose in the world. That's what we're supposed to do with it, and that's it. God commanded that in order for the makos, the first 3 makos, you know, to come into effect, someone's supposed to hit the sand, and that was it. So why was Moshe so concerned about the feelings of both the Nile River and also the sand of Mitzrayim? So So the yesod that I believe that most achronim answer is that it's not Moshe didn't end up Moshe gave Aaron the opportunity to hit it, as opposed to Moshe refrained from hitting the ground and hitting the Nile River, not because, you know, it was a feeling type of thing. It was something personal that he didn't want to cause damage or personally offend those objects that ended up saving him. Rather, it was focused on himself. It was Moshe's regular nature, just, you know, not disrespecting others. He was a straight man. He was an honest man. He was an Erlich Hayid. That's what made him a monarch of Klal Yisrael. The fact that he was such an honor, which we'll also speak about later. So that's who he was. That's exactly what his nature was. And the chiddush is that he didn't only have that attitude of just, you know, self-respect, you know, for himself, that the way he treated other people. Rather, in addition to that, he also had that attitude and that nature of just, you know, respect towards actual objects itself. And that's such a yesod that, you know, he which is one of his nature, just to, you know, in terms of, like, disrespecting not only other people but other things as well. And it's so important that because why? Because he was so attached to these things, because he felt such a connection. The fact that he was saved by the Nile River, the fact that he was saved by the sand, was that he was showing them Hakar Satov, was just that, you know, just a sense of respect, because that's how Moshe rolled. That was his style. And it's such a yesod that if a person, whatever a person attaches himself to, ultimately in life, you know, the amount of respect that he'll show towards that person or thing, no matter what it is, no matter who it is, or no matter what it is, the amount of respect is unlimited that a person will show to that specific object or thing. Aye, but what exactly is the yesod? The yesod is to figure out. So before we deepen that yesod, I just wanted to mention we also find this also in halacha a lot. It's in Shulchan Aruch in Orach Chaim in Simon Kuf Ayin Aleph. That Simon, I don't know if you guys learned in halacha Seder somewhere, I think floating around Chelik Beis. You learn Kuf Ayin Aleph. So what does it speak about? Kuf Ayin Aleph speaks about being mivaza ochel, bizoy ochel. Disgracing food. It goes through the halachos. Not to throw certain food, not to throw bread, not to use, let's say, you know, like, you know, a bunch of these, like, big fruits as, like, chairs, or, you know, to, like, let's say, sit on it, or, you know, to use them in different things. Why? Because, and there's an isser. Why? Because the pshat is that the food has a certain purpose, and food is meant to be treated, you know, with its purpose that it's supposed to be. And we're supposed to respect those values. It's not a person; doesn't have feelings. But no, that's just the way that's the way in terms of how Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, created food, and that's exactly also the way Kadosh Baruch Hu created us. That our nature is supposed to be, you know, not necessarily, again, doesn't have to be, you know, emotionally, you know, emotion. You have to emotionally feel bad for inanimate objects, but you have to respect them also. And like we said. Again, the yesod is that a person is going to respect that which he is attached to. But the key is, obviously, is figuring out what are we attached to in life. Depending on what a person is attached to will obviously determine and reveal where is he holding in terms of what respect does he have. Lamashal, you have a person who's very, very connected to things that are the things that are Gashmias related. See a phone. How protective are it could be us, it could be our friends, it could be our family, it could be any strangers that we see. People that like their phone, or however they might have an addiction. But in addition to that addiction, how protective are they over these things? You see, if you have a phone already, you should just be a regular phone. Then they have the case. You see, my case is already, but broken. Then there's also the screen protector, and you have all these different Madragos, and then you have this type of charger, and the portable charger, the non-portable charger, the half portable charger, right? There's like the Mophie that plugs in, then there's the regular one, the outlet, and then there's the portable charger, but you have that big box that you have to carry around. But it doesn't fit in your pocket, so it's like, I don't know like what you're supposed to do with it. Like, it just takes up both your hands. So I never really understood exactly what, you know, that's supposed to do. But the point is, but you see, those people genuinely have respect for their phone. Some people, you know, have an emotional attachment, but at least everyone on a minimal level, it's a certain respect that you have towards that phone. Halavai. If people were, let's say, to have that attitude towards, let's say, ruchnius type of things. You see, sir, I find it such a beautiful thing when people let you know a person that gets like a nice pair of tefillin, and he also gets a nice case with the batim and the ritzuos, or a person that's like a nice towel instead of like one of these like otter boxes, like for the phones, it's like a really nice talus case. Like, he respects it, and it's such an important thing in terms of respecting. There's the things that we respect. In addition to, you know, one chiluk between ruchnius and gashmius, I also want to point out maybe another ha'ara in terms of respecting other people's things. Right? It's much easier to respect our own phone, let's say someone else's phone, or even on a much different level. You know, when a person basic human decency. Let's say, you know, these days it's radio. So. This is, I think, it's not so plush. It's like, you know, you come in and like you come into someone else's house and like you think that like you know you're entitled to everything because like you were just outside in the wet in the rain. So like somehow like all rules are off. But you know, let's say a person's shoes are actually dirty, which is often the case. So a person's supposed to wipe their feet off. Small things. But it goes ultimately a long way. The small details of a person ultimately reveal the essence of a person. If a person is very sensitive and very respectful for all these things, it reveals that in essence, that the type of person he is that he's someone that, like Moshe Rabbeinu, that he truly respects both in terms of people and also has self-respect towards himself, in terms of the standards he holds of himself, in terms of respecting other objects, even if they don't have any feelings. So Adkan, idea number one. Idea number two, we'll go a little backwards in the parasha. In Perek Vav, Pasuk Gimel. All the way in the early stages of the parasha. So Hashem tells Moshe that, hey, it's me, I'm Hashem. Vayirel Avram, and he says, I appeared to Avram, Vel Yitzchak, Vel Yaakov, I appeared to you, the forefathers, Bekel Shakai, Ushmi Hashem, Lo Nodati Lahem. I appeared to them as Kel Shakai. And my name is Hashem. And they didn't know me, I wasn't known to them from that. So we have to explain in terms of what exactly is going on here. And we know later on, a couple of psukim later, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands that Bnei Yisrael is going through all these hardships, right in Perek Vav, Pasuk Zayin, he says, I'm going to take you out, and you're going to be, I'll be your God, and whatever, you'll be my nation. Vidatem, and you should know, Ki Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, your God, who took, Amotzi Eschem Mitachas Sablos Mitzrayim, who's going to take you out from Mitzrayim. So, we're sort of fluctuating back and forth between the Shemos of Hashem. Right, we're starting out with Kel Shakai, right? That name, which was mentioned a lot over Sefer Bereishis, and then all of a sudden we transitioned to this name of what? Of Hashem, of Shem Havaya, Yud Kei Vav Kei. So two questions at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So two questions we have to focus on. First of all, what's the difference between these two names? Why are we making this change now? Is this a practical, technical type of difference between HaKadosh Baruch Hu's two names, or is it a much more fundamental, global idea in terms of there's some bigger difference, some deep idea which we need to focus on? And also, what's the connection? All of a sudden, we change now. We're going from different modes, right? From Gullus to right now, we're in the Geula stage of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So, what does that have to do? What's the connection between that and the shame of Hashem? As opposed to Kel Shakai. So the Ramban brings down the Yesod. The Ramban, already in Sefer Shmos, This is a great time to give a plug that we're talking about things about doing a la Torah after Shnai Mikra. Ramban is such a fascinating commentary, such important yesodos, especially these weeks of Shmos Va'era Bo. Parshas Bo is probably the most famous Ramban al Torah. He speaks about such yesodos about Amunah and Bitochon and many different ideas in terms of the way, in terms of the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, what does he want from us in this world? It's such a fascinating commentary. I think they once asked Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, the Rashiv of Gush, if he was stuck on an island, he had a choice to take one book. What would he take? And he said that if it was one book, he would choose Rabban al Torah. So they asked another Chashva Rav. They also asked him that question, and he said if he had a choice to choose one book, he would take a book that described how to build a boat if you're stuck on an island and to, you know, return back home safely. So it's a little more litvish side of the story, but anyways, but the Ramban is so important. And he says, and over here in this context, he brings down Yesod and wants to be mechalik between the different shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The first one is Kel Shakai. That's the name in which what happened. That's the primary name in which he appeared to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yankiv with. And when the Ramban writes that when the Torah writes Kel Shakai, it's representing the side of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is osek and involved in our daily endeavors in the most natural way, and he is responsible for the day-to-day runnings of the world. The normal functions of the world, day in and day out, that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, runs and is in charge and oversees, that's the Kel Shakai aspect of that. When a person just, you know, thinks it's just a regular day, the fact that he's able to get up in the morning, he's able to use the restroom, and he goes from place to place, whether what the weather's outside, the normal day-to-day things, that's all Kel Shakai for Kadosh Baruch Hu. And, on the contrary, Shem Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei represents what? New life, Chaim Chadoshim, says the Ramban. Doing these, making Nisim and Niflos, without limits, B'li Gvulot, just going, no borders, not necessarily connected to, you know, the natural teva. Much more wondrous nisim and niflos. And the Chassam Sofer deepens this a little bit. That he says that what this is the pshat in terms of the transition between the two names here. Up until now, what was going on? HaKadosh Baruch Hu and all the others were so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were on such a high madrega, whether it be with Avram, whether it be with Yaakov's Emes, or Yitzchak's Gvura, or Avram's Chesed, and Avram's Kirov, and Yaakov's sensitivity, and Yitzchak's Kedusha, and Yaakov's sensitivity. They were able to achieve such a high level of Kedusha that they were able to experience Yad Hashem and see Hashem in the most normal way, day in and day out. They were very easy to see it in every aspect of their lives, morning, afternoon, and night, day in and day out. It was much easier. That's why the HaKadosh Baruch Hu only needed to use his Kel Shakai aspect towards the Avos, because that was just normal. They were able to see Yad Hashem much more clearly. However, Bnei Yisrael, we know that, right, Rabbi Moshe, that when Bnei Yisrael was in Mitzrayim for 210 years, over time, they degraded lower and lower. So they ended up falling a lot to different levels, to the lowest of the lows, the levels of Tumah. They ended up dropping to almost the lowest level. And the more Tumah they had in their lives, the harder it was to see Yad Hashem. And because of that. That was why, says the Chassam Sofer, that they needed this Shem Hashem to be motzi them from Mitzrayim. They needed to go out in style, as they said. They needed HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do Yetzias Mitzrayim, not in the ordinary fashion, let's just say. This was in the time of the Avos. The pshat is that there would just be a cab waiting for them, and they would leave in the most normal fashion. It wouldn't have been this whole dramatic 10 plagues, people dying, and Mother Nature functioning in the craziest ways possible. Rather, it would have been just a Pashut way, but the fact that Bnei Yisrael was not able to see the Yad Hashem, that's when they needed that Shem Havai, that's when they needed that the Yud Kei Vav Kei. They needed it. They needed more. The more of a chizik of Nisim and the flows. It's important to also realize that nowadays, that it's very, very hard to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every day, day in and day out, there's Nisim and the flows that are being done. Day in and day out, we say during Modim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we thank Him for all the wondrous miracles that He does for us, morning, afternoon, and night. But when we say that, do we really mean it? Are we really able to recognize all those miracles? Everything's a nes. Sometimes they're just called nes nigla, as opposed to nes nistar. Sometimes they're hidden, sometimes they're revealed. Everything here is. But the issue is, do we really feel that? Do we really recognize? Do we recognize that? That's the first thing. And even if we recognize that, do we really feel that? Do we really feel that every day here is a true blessing to be here, both in this world and both in the Beis Medrash? Do we not realize that other people are just not fortunate and aren't as fortunate enough to either A, be learning Torah, or B, even just living just a quality life, just a life, you know, a decent life, a life full of quality? How thankful should we be about HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And Ben Zur Shem, using that idea, it's very important just to open our eyes a little bit. We've been speaking about that theme for the past couple weeks. So Ad Kan idea number two. Idea number three, and with this we'll conclude, is we get to the Makos towards the end of the Parsha. And like we mentioned earlier in the earlier tonight, Shir, that 7 out of the 10 Makos took place in this week's Parsha. And the and number 7 is Barad. The fire and ice, the hail. That's the mother nature to its extreme. And the pasuk says before that happens, HaKadosh Baruch Hu command right between Shechin and Bar, right after Shechin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe in Perek Tes, pasuk Yigimo, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Hashkim baboker v'esyatzim l'fnei Paro v'amarta elov, wake up early in the morning and stand before Paro and tell him, Ko amar Hashem Elokei Avrim shalach azami ve'avduni. You have to tell him that, you know, remind him that it's like Rosh Baruch Hu, he's gonna bring plagues. If you don't end up, you know, freeing your slaves, freeing my slaves, my Ovdei Hashem. So I wanted to deepen on the shot of Hisyatsev. The word of Hisyatsev means to stand, almost to be a omein, stand before Paro. Why Bedafka stand? So I think so it's the Or HaChaim that brings down. Sure, we have an Or HaChaim here. The Or HaChaim Ala Torah brings down such a fun. It appears to just be a small subtle diuk, but it's such a fundamental yesod that often we like to say every word in the Torah has a certain meaning. The Torah never wastes words. The Torah never omits words. Every single word in the Torah has a specific, well, in terms of its quantity, depending on how many words are out there in the Torah. Right? We don't waste any words. We don't add any extra words. And also the language, the quality. Each word is meant to have a specific purpose. So the Or HaChaim on the spot there explains as follows, that it was Dafka Yisiatzev that he should stand. Perish, says the Or HaChaim, Shelo Yarkin Rosho Velo Yarkin Komosa Kiderach Omen Lefnei Gedolim El Kigodo Omen Lefnei. Right, so what's the pshat here? Says the Or HaChaim that Moshe's nature was that, in fact, the Chazal tells us that, right, he was the biggest Anav out there. There was no more humble. And he had such respect for everyone. So his normal nature was going to be what? And he was going to bow down to Paro. Because he's showing respect to the king. No matter, even though Paro tormented the Jewish people, tortured them for years. Moshe was humble. That was his nature. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him specifically to stand and not to bow down. Because Paro, because why? He continues to Orchaim. Ela ki gadol ha'omen lefnei katan. Ki kvar asu ribon v'shalat alav. V'hutzrach l'tzavos l'tzad shemitim al Moshe l'harkin roshem ha'atki derech ha'shvelim. Moshe was normally, he was going to bow, always. And, you know, quote unquote, he make himself humble. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, no. Really, you, Moshe, you're the great one. You're the gadol. And Paro is a rasha. He's a katan. So it's not to die for you to do that. Even though that's your normal nature. Still, it's very, very important that you have some respect for yourself. Paro wasn't that roy for kavod. And just to deepen this idea, we'll finish with this. This is such a yesod that no matter, that again, eino chinami, a person is, in terms of his character traits and midos, the emphasis of anava, a person cannot, there's no limit in terms of speaking about this. Being humble is such an important yesod in terms of growth in yeshiva. But however, it needs to be a proper balance. Don't be super, super humble. You don't have to be that super, super, you know, from guy, but, you know, that's got to be humble to the max. You're also a human being. There's an aspect of godless adam, and again, even though a person is supposed to be honored to the max, but still, there's an aspect of understanding who you are. You're great. This shiftless is good, but you also have to remember that what we're the amanifchar, we're the chosen ones. We should be proud of that. What we're doing, here is chashuv. Right? As opposed to you look out there in the streets. People that are committing Gilei Arayos, Shvichas Tam, Avodah Zarah. What? So you want to be that super firm person and then be so super humble? Be like, those people are too good for me. Those people are on a different madrigas. They could do that. I'm a low level guy. No, don't be that firm. The pshat is that they're osik in shtuyot and you're osik in dvar Hashem and you're better than them because what you're doing here is choshev. So even though again there's an aspect of anava a person's supposed to have. But in terms of, there's also another aspect, at least the proper balance, that what you're doing here is chashuv, and you should feel good about that. And it's important to recognize that. Like, there's an aspect of greatness. But again, not to get too carried away, that's in certain places, in certain yeshivas, that's a certain issue. In terms of guys who get carried away with that Musar Mahalach of Slabug of Godless Adam. But if a person has that proper balance of, again, having that midah of, let's say, anava, and also having, you know, that attitude that, you know, someone that's learning, that's osik in Dvar Hashem every day, at least for this year, day in and day out, is, you know, something chashuv that you're feeling like you're a godless to a certain extent, because that's what we want to strive for. We want to strive for godless. I'll end that with, I heard something from Rav Moshe Wolfson. You said he's the Mashiach. He should be he's not so well, but he's the Mashkech of Torah Vidas. And he said that he once said a yesod that you should try to be an anav, but you shouldn't be a zanav. What does that mean? You should be humble. You should have the sense of humility. That who are you in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch? HaKadosh Baruch is the creator of the world. You're just an Eved Hashem, a Stam Yid. But don't be a zanav. Don't be a tail of an animal. Because there's an Indian of self-respect also. Holding yourself to certain standards, right? When you have self-respect for yourself, what's the pshat? You also hold yourself to higher standards, which is such a key, it's such a fundamental point for growth. When you hold yourself to higher standards, you demand that much. You demand more of yourself, and it pushes you to apply yourself more because your potential is now higher, and you got to work to reach that, to fulfill that potential, reach that level. And the higher you hold yourself, that's the higher you're going to grow. So these are three ideas which we spoke about tonight, about the idea of having respect not only for human beings but also even inanimate objects. But lav dafka, that again, the fact that we're sensitive towards them, it's just that's our nature. That's who we. That's how we just need to generally be. Just, you know, in terms of respecting, you know, other things as well, the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. B, understanding the different aspects of Shem Hashem, and recognize that day in and day out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is performing miracles. So whether they're open miracles or, you know, more hidden miracles, and sometimes we can't see that.
and right understanding the different aspects of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Like we mentioned earlier in the year, balancing Avos Hashem, Yiras Hashem, different names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very, very complex. And our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu should also be very complex and nuanced. And the last idea, which we spoke about, is again that balance of greatness and also humility. It's important, right? You'd be like that Moshe Rabbeinu, right? You, the Anuf. Being humble is such an important character trait, but again, also recognizing, you know, within truly every single one of you has such potential, and you just have to recognize that each one of you has a tremendous amount of greatness. Have a great night.